You are listening to Sci Tales by CCMB Podcast. This podcast is produced as part of the OMICS 2021, an international conference organized by the Proteomics Society of India in collaboration with CSIR, Center for Cellular and Molecular Biology, and CCMB Science Foundation.
Hello and welcome to Sci Tales by CCMB Podcast. Today we are focusing on proteomics, that is the study of proteins. To discuss about this, we have with us Dr. Swasthi Rai Chowdhury. Right now as we speak, Swasthi is affiliated with CCMB Hyderabad, heading the Rai Chowdhury Lab. Welcome Dr. Swasthi Rai Chowdhury to Sci Tales.
Thank you.
So let's start by addressing the very curious question in proteomics, which any person would ask if they came to know about proteomics. Why is it important to know about proteins? What's special about proteomics?
Yeah, so we all know about genes. Genes are the storage of information that is transmitted from one generation to another. On the other hand, proteins represent the function and molecules. Genes contain only information and proteins does the function. So we can tell that the information encoded in the genes are transformed into functions to our proteins. For example, as I am talking with you now, I am talking something, you are listening to it, you are understanding it, you are reacting to it. All these events are happening because some proteins are working in coordination. The information coded in the genes, proteins are the function and molecules, proteins execute the functions, and that's why we have different stages in our life. So the study of this entire set of the proteins, which are present at the early stage of the life or late stage of the life or during a disease state, the study of this entire set of the protein, having the landscape of the proteins, we call it proteomics. Let us consider a fire incident in an office building. Let's say in that office building, there are 5 executives among the 100 employees. There are 10 managers, 30 supervisors, and the rest of the people may be workers. Now, normally executives sit in an AC office, workers work elsewhere. And one of the machines starts showing the first fire. Obviously, only few of the workers will be noticing that incident at the beginning. So once they see it, they will report it to their supervisors. Now, supervisors are going to talk among themselves, will try to take care of that local fire at the beginning. But if they are successful, the information is not transmitted at the upper level. But if they're not successful, they will be reporting to their managers. Managers will be reporting to their executives, and the executives, when they will see the situation is not under control anymore, they will be forming multiple teams to react to that fire. For example, some of these workers will be given the responsibility to contact the fire brigade, call them immediately. Some of the workers will be told to take care of the office computers and the other machines which are not yet affected by the fire. Some workers will be possibly taking care of the aged people who are present in that building at that point of time. So there will be a work distribution. Not only that, when the fire brigade comes to the place of the incidents, they will start fighting. So another group of people will be involved in the fire incidents. There will be public who will be standing outside the building and maybe watching the fire. And to control the public, the activities of the public, we will also require police force over there. So you can see various different group of people will be involved in the activities because a certain sudden fire is there in the building, right? Similar thing happens, for example, if we experience a disease. For example, if we take the disease which is going on worldwide, the pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, when the virus infects the cells, let us consider that as a fire. Okay, as soon as that infection is there, some group of proteins are going to understand this or recognize there is an infection. Then will be signaling events happening inside the cell. Some other groups of proteins will be activated. Some executive proteins will be reported. Those executive proteins will be taking action. So entire set of defense mechanism will be activated. Now, how do we study all these events inside the cell? So genomics cannot help directly in this way because these are the functions which are executed by proteins. So we need to know about the proteins which are executing their functions. So we require to take the help of proteomics experiments. And only when we understand that, then we'll be able to develop a strategy to combat.
Thank you for explaining the purpose of proteomics in such a short span of time. Let's get into some more details about your research in proteomics. How does proteomics help you?
Well, I am interested in understanding how mitochondria behave at different conditions. And another interest I have in Parkinson's disease. Some neurons are getting affected in case of Parkinson's disease. We try to understand that. And the third area of interest recently, I have been also involved in sickle cell anemia proteomics research. And all these studies, I use proteomics a lot. Let me elaborate a little bit further. Start with mitochondria. You know, the mitochondria is so-called the powerhouse of the cell. It produces the energy for the cell. And the cellular energy demand varies time to time. For example, if a cricketer is practicing or a footballer is running or taking a sprint, we are doing physical exercise on a regular basis. When we are going to gym, for example, for that purpose, or we are going for a trekking, in all these conditions, we have different energy requirements for the cell. Okay, so the mitochondrial proteins adapt to these conditions and generate more energy or less energy depending on the demand of the cell at that particular condition. So what I am trying to study, how and the way this energy is generated, we call it cellular respiration. So what I am studying in how the cellular respiration is controlled by the alteration of the proteins inside mitochondria. Now the second one, neurons. Neurons gets affected, a particular group of neurons. I am using a technical term, dopaminergic neurons. These get affected in Parkinson's disease.
Okay. So what is dopaminergic neurons?
Yeah. So we have different kind of neurotransmitters released by the neurons in our brain. Okay, so these neurotransmitters help us to communicate against different signals. I mean, there are different kind of neurons. Some neurons we are called GABAergic neurons. Some are called dopaminergic neurons. So here in this case, dopamine is the neurotransmitter which is released upon certain signals. Okay, so as these neurons release dopamine, we call these dopaminergic neurons. So it is present in one part of the brain, okay. And this particular group of neurons gets affected at the beginning of the progression of Parkinson's disease. But later, slowly, when we age, this damage spreads throughout the brain. Okay. Now we are asking the questions: how this damage is spread from these dopaminergic neurons or the particular region of the brain to throughout the brain, okay? Because when the whole brain gets damaged, then we only see the manifestation of the disease.
Fine, we went a bit technical over there. Our listeners might be interested to get a quick recap of this in a much more simpler way. If you can explain with an example, it would be more easier to grasp.
So let's say in a society, only a single house gets the fire at the beginning, right? So again, there will be, let us say this is the region of the brain where the first effect of the Parkinson's disease is seen. Okay, that is the house. Now, as soon as the fire happens, the family members or the house members, what they are going to do, they are going to react to the fire in a very similar way in the office building, what we have seen. They will try to take care of the fire, and when they are unable to do so, possibly some of them will be calling fire brigade, some of them will be calling their neighbors to seek help. Okay, so the neighbors will try to help at the beginning, and if the fire goes out of control, then neighbors will fly away because their house is also going to be affected next. Okay, so neighbors get the opportunity to fly away. The same thing happens, as I have mentioned, at the local region of the brain. First time this manifestation of the Parkinson's disease is seen and slowly spreads across the brain. So I am trying to understand how stage by stage this disease progresses. And as I told you, proteins does everything here. So we are trying to use proteomics to understand this progression of the disease. So these are the kind of research is going on in my lab. And for all these purposes, as I mentioned, I am using proteomics.
That's great. Apart from the diseases you mentioned, what are the other kind of areas where proteomics is used to unravel the mystery of diseases? For example, the area of cancer research. We have an application of proteomics there, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, the umbrella of proteomics is really, really huge. Any question in biology, whatever you can ask, can be addressed by proteomics, to some extent at least. Cancer research is getting highly benefited by proteomics. If you take, for example, breast cancer is very common in Indian population, and we often hear stage 1 cancer, stage 2 cancer, stage 3 cancers. And in fact, the physicians or clinicians can even find out stage 2, but this grade. So different kind of nomenclatures we always hear from these doctors. How these people get to know? There are two ways. The first is microscopy-based. Some assays are there to identify those different stages and grades. People go for biopsy. Basically, microscopy mostly done there. There are some blood markers, proteins which increase, or panel of proteins which increase in the blood or at the particular tissue at the different stages of the diseases, right, of this cancer. So proteomics can identify new markers for different stages. And not only that, proteomics-based identification and markers are already helping. We have new biomarkers identified by the proteomics experiments for different stages of cancer. Now new diagnostic assays are coming with this information. And there is worldwide research going on in identification of this kind of biomarkers for cancer, for different kind of cancers. Why only different kind of cancers? I will tell even different stages of diabetes, different stages of various inflammatory diseases, including ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, or in fact, even dementia. So any disease we can study using the proteomics kind of experiments.
Oh, okay. Let's double click on diseases. When we get into the way of treating diseases, one thing that pop up is a drug research. Having said that, what is the future in drug research when it comes to developing drugs to cure diseases which are more personal? How does proteomics help in getting the right drug for a person?
Yeah, so basically you are talking about personalized medicine, the concept of personalized medicine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there are variations between genomes between individuals. All human beings, all of us have 46 chromosomes, right? So 23 pairs of chromosomes. But the genome, the information coded in those chromosomes, the so-called genome, varies between individuals. In fact, my daughter and I do share chromosomes. Possibly she has chromosomes for me, but the genome information, the encoded information encoded in her genes are slightly different from me. And that is what makes her my daughter, and that is why I am. So this is individualistic. And this is why the requirement of personalized medicine is important. For example, if you have a COVID infection within a family, the same virus strain may be infecting all the family members here. But depending on the health state of the individuals or the members of the family, the severity of the infection may differ. For example, younger people may be less affected, older people more affected, the person with diabetes is more affected. So their health states are different. And it is determined by the proteome content in the different organs of their body. In order to understand how their health state is different, we require proteomics-based, genomics-based assays. And once we understand these individual-specific differences in the proteome and genome, then only we'll be able to devise the right strategies to treat these individuals for any disease, not only COVID-19, but for any disease, I mean. The point is, so far, we did not reach that level of understanding so that we can do the personalized medicine depending on the information available from genomics or proteomics. So far, the personalized approaches of modern medicine is only symptom-based, knowing the a panel of biomarkers by blood tests and so on and so forth. In that direction, as far as I know, there are even companies in India who are doing individual genome sequencing. I am hopeful in the future, or I would say near future, there will be even companies who will be able to do the proteome component of different individuals. So we'll be having information from the individual genome, we'll be having information for individual proteome, and combining all this data, we'll be able to possibly go one step forward towards personalized medicine. But I would definitely say this is still symptom-based and the mechanism-based and information-based personalized medicine. It's a long way to go, still a long way to go, but we can reach there.
Let's hope for the best in drug research, as you mentioned about the power of proteomics.
Yeah.
So moving on, we are now here with Omics 2021. That is genomics, proteomics, lipidomics, and so on. Let's take the first two, genomics and proteomics. According to you, is one better than the other, and can the two be used together for a better way of treating our problems in the research?
Oh, surely. I mean, all these omics are complementary to each other. If you think of genomics, or if you talk about genomics, and if we talk about proteomics, I think that without the information of the genomics, without the human genome project, the modern proteomics experiments would not have been possible. So Human Genome Project helped us in many ways. It first brought the omics concept to see the whole genome together, proteome together, metabolome together. This omics concept came with the Human Genome Project. Not only that, Human Genome Project brought the approach of systemic science, understanding a system altogether. The technological development happened during the stages of the Human Genome Project, also helped proteomics a lot. And not only that, we all have genome information right now available that helps proteomics experiments very, very significantly. On the other hand, I already mentioned that genome means only information. Genomics only provide the information contained in our cells, in our body, but the how the information is processed, you can know only by proteomics experiment. You can take the example of butterfly, the life cycle of butterfly. We have caterpillar, we have the fully grown butterfly. The genome contained in both the stages of life same. The proteins are different. And that makes a caterpillar caterpillar, and the different stages of their life, their protein changes, and it becomes a butterfly. If you think of our body, in my eye cell, the genome content in my eye cell, in my liver cell, in my kidney cells, these are same, but different sets of proteins are present in these different organs, and that makes the different organs. If you think of the SARS-CoV-2, we know different strains are infecting people across the world. How do you know these are different strains? We are sequencing their genome and we are identifying these are different strains. But how these different strains have different severity of infection, we have to understand that only using proteomics, because this infection happens and then our body is reacting to it. And as we are not unable to react to certain of the certain strains, we are having a greater severity of the infection. But why it is not happening for that particular strain, if you want to understand that, we require to have use the proteomics-based strategies. So all these omics basically are complementary to each other. And if you want to have a whole picture of the story, then we require to use all these things, and combining all this information, we get the full picture.
That's really a great thing to hear. Before we wind up this episode, Swasti, where do you see India's capabilities in proteomics? If at all we are lacking at any point, how it can be strengthened?
Okay, this is a good question. We cannot really claim that we are the best in the world. Surely, we are not the best. But I would also say we are not at the infancy yet. We are growing. So historically, proteomic research began in the country maybe 15, 16 years back. When I was a PhD student, I remember in 2004 or 2005, first time I saw a mass spectrometer in my laboratory in Kolkata, Shaha Institute of Nuclear Physics. And as far as I know, during that time, the mass spectrometers, few mass spectrometers got installed in India. Maybe at that point of time, countrywide, 4 or 5 mass spectrometers were there and 4 or 5 proteomics labs. And today, I can tell you there could be almost 100 labs and more than 1,000 mass spectrometers, including industry, I mean, more than 1,000 mass spectrometers are present in India. Now, if you think of the manpower, the trained manpower who are able to operate these mass spectrometers, you can imagine that at least 1,000 human beings are trained in the mass spectrometers. But whether this is sufficient to reach the world level, definitely not. We have to improve. We have to definitely improve. But things are improving, and things are improving, I would not say in a very slow space. We are doing good. We are doing good. So, for example, the kind of questions earlier you asked, used to ask using proteomics, this research, we are asking much more tougher questions. We are taking the challenge of sickle cell anemia profiling. There are groups in India who are doing cardiac disease profiling, and we are also participating from India. We are also participating in Human Proteome Project, a very challenging project where we are contributing do proteome of particular organs of our body. So this is a Human Proteome Project, is a worldwide project, and we have taken certain countries have taken certain organs to sequence in a particular group of people. So in, from India, we are also participating in that project. Mumbai IIT, Dr. Sanjeev Srivastava, even in CCMB partially, we are contributing to this project. There are more people who are contributing to this project. So I would not say that we are still in infancy. In this context, I would also like to mention here about our Proteomics Society of India. So keeping with the growth of proteomic research in India, almost 13 years back, several proteomic researchers from various institutes and universities, they came together and constituted this non-profit society, the Proteomic Society of India. It is, I am proud to say that it was born in CSIR CCMB, and it is still housed in CSIR CCMB. The goal of the society is to disseminate knowledge, training, and awareness among all interest groups, all stakeholders in the broad area of the proteomic research and its application. We are participating, we have members of Proteomic Society of India who are also members of Human Proteome Organization. Not only they are members, they are office bearers of those organizations. So in addition to that, in collaboration with this Human Proteome Organization, Asia Oceania Human Proteome Organization, with these organizations, we are also organizing international conferences. We are bringing scientists from abroad to India to train the people, train our students here, organizing workshops, organizing seminars. And in fact, on a regular basis, we are organizing trainings of workshop under the umbrella of PSI. So keeping all this together, I would say, I see a rich history, a rich beginning of proteomic research in India. I see a perfect present. And I can't possibly dream for a bright future of proteomic research in India.
Yes, we are sure that many more research would happen in India. Thank you so much, Dr. Swasti, for putting in this much interest for speaking to our listeners. A big thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So that's it for today. Stay tuned with SciTales, a podcast by CCMB Science Foundation. It's me, Ananda Padmanabhan, your host and co-producer, along with Somdutta Kharak for today's episode, signing off.
This is the SciTales by CCMB Podcast.